What up? What up, everybody? This is Double G with the Fight Game podcast. John and I are back after a week in which I was away, and this time last week, you heard my conversation with Larry Dallas before he broadcasted the Triple Mania show. But John and I are back, and we're going to talk normal show. But the one abnormal thing is, there was a Tuesday night war that nobody asked for because of sports,
yeah,
and time slots and baseball. So WWE and AEW went heads up yesterday. Now, a lot of the conversation has already happened about both shows, so we'll try to be unique. I think we have a pretty critical grasp of AEW in general, so that won't change. But we'll also talk a little bit about NXT, because I hadn't watched. I looked on my Hulu. The last NXT show I watched was in May, so it's been quite a while since I watched that show. And I caught it from yesterday. So we'll talk about it. We'll talk about AEW. Obviously, I think the thing that we need to talk about first is Adam Page. Holy cow, that was scary last night.
Yeah, that was scary. Very scary. You know, freak accident, basically. And from all accounts, sounds like he's doing good now. And I'm guessing, you know, some kind of concussion. And, you know, glad it wasn't anything more severe, like a neck injury or anything like that. So,
yeah, I think that's what we were all worried about. And thankfully, he is, sounds like he's going to be okay, so that's going to be, in a way, and Dave kind of mentioned this last night on Wrestling Observer Radio, I was kind of wondering what the finish was going to be, because Adam Page has been so cold of late.
Mm-hmm.
He's been off TV, and then the one time he comes back on, it's like a joke, and then finally he was fiery, and he's fired up, and then he was going to have to lose, and in a way, this kind of gives him a little bit of an out, so hopefully they follow up on it, and you know, he didn't take the three count. So we'll see what happens. But one interesting thing about this show, this is a first. We have an ad read.
There you go.
I don't even know if you know about this.
Manscaped.
No Manscaped. No Roman.
No Roman.
This is a much different ad read, but because our show is now on the we're on Apple, we're on Spotify, so it's not only subscribers to F4W can listen, it's also out there. So with it being out there,
I know one thing.
What?
The Heartbreak Kid, David Rubio, he definitely wants to be Code Academy.
I thought you said he was going to hit the 30-second fast forward button.
No, he would never. He would never on our show, he said.
Okay, so I have a question for you. And it may not be you, but this is kind of a question for the audience, too. But you can just pretend that you're the audience. Do you ever get frustrated that you cannot watch certain live sports events because they aren't televised or aren't available in whichever country that you preside?
Yes. Sometimes, you know, I want to throw on the Blue Jays game.
Right.
Yeah.
Soccer. There's some soccer out there that I know American soccer fans, they're like, if we want the real stuff, like MLS is cool, but we want like the real stuff. Now they're doing a lot better job of getting those rights and stuff for US rights, but not always. So there's a product called NordVPN. And with NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a country that is showing the sports event. So if you don't want to miss out and you want to watch the action live, you know, you want to wait till, you know, midnight or 3 o'clock in the morning, NordVPN can help you do that. It is a very, very inexpensive way to use a VPN. Price of a cup of coffee every month, a small price to pay for premium cybersecurity, because there's also a security piece to VPN. It's not just about streaming from other countries, and access to a vast amount of entertaining content from all over the world. To get your exclusive NordVPN deal, go to NordVPN.com/F4W. You get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, plus 4 months for free. So it's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Now, when I did this, we did the same, a similar ad on We're Live Pal. Andrew Zarian, my co-host, was like, oh, I've had a subscription to NordVPN forever. I love it. So that was like really easy. I was like, okay, tell everyone what you love about NordVPN. But so just by proxy of We're Live Pal, you also have the Andrew Zarian stamp of approval for NordVPN.
That was a smooth ad read, man.
Well,
you're like stayed. The well, smooth operation. That was good, man.
Sade.
Sade.
Well, you know, we used to have to do them back in the day before we came to F4W.
You're a pro, you know. It's been a while, I feel like. And it's like, it was nice to hear. It just flows. Great. Well,
I'm glad. Hopefully NordVPN is happy with it, too.
They are very happy.
Okay, so let's kick it off the old school days, talking about NXT here. Now, we're not going to go, you know, segment by... We can talk about the big stuff, but more interesting to me is... whether or not you thought, and I thought, they did a good job of pumping Halloween Havoc, which is this Saturday. And I've mentioned this before. The only reason I knew Halloween Havoc was this Saturday is because we're trying to do something for Dave's birthday and we had to switch it to Friday. Because of Halloween Havoc. So that's why I knew that this show existed. Otherwise, I had no idea this show was coming up. And so watching this show... with fresh eyes, like I said, haven't watched this show since May, and I, you know, the new colors that are the old colors was a nice surprise, but I immediately saw that building, and I was like, this is the same building. These same fans who are much respected, they get my respect for being so hardcore. I know this is their product, and they really love it. I know Shawn Michaels has said that he wants to take, you know, some of the bigger shows on the road again, which I'd be so thankful for. But yeah, you know, so I kind of got into it and I was like, it's kind of the same thing. And you've mentioned this when you rewatched NXT when they went back to Black and Gold. But my first real takeaway was that the format and the booking of this show is generally the same as it was. The wrestlers themselves are better. Their looks are better. Like, I don't think Cora Jade is actually that much better of a wrestler, but her heel character and some of her heel mannerisms I thought were good, though. When she faced Raquel, they had this thing where they were hitting each other with the stick, and Raquel just whooped her, got disqualified, and Cora Jade's reaction, instead of being bent over so hurt that she could barely walk out of the ring, once they announced that she won the match, she started laughing. And I was like, what? And then she remembered, oh, yeah, I got hit with this thing and I have to sell the thing. I was like, okay, well, maybe I'm giving her too much credit for the new character, the new heel version of her. But overall, I just thought, oh, this is booked exactly the same style, the same style of matches, though the wrestling is going to be better because they actually have better wrestlers as well. But first impression was this show is not too dissimilar from May when we stopped watching.
No, I still think there's going to be a somewhat of a transition. Hopefully, like I said, I think more by the end of the year, we should get, you know, more influx of the UK talent, which will be nice. And there's still some of the skits there that I don't like. Some of the way they're produced, some of the campiness, though. I don't mind that. I didn't mind that. The one skit I did watch for some reason was the Chase U skit.
Mm-hmm.
And it just happened to be the Chucky tie-in.
Yeah.
Right?
There was a bunch of them.
Oh, was there?
Yeah.
I thought like this was the only one and not this one were a fit. You know, it was fine. And I kind of get a kick out of Thea Hale, the little spunky Chase U member. But overall, I thought it was a good show. Did it pump me up for Halloween Havoc? One match did. I liked the Julius Creed, Damon Kemp, dueling promo.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Julius Creed has something. Damian Kemp's a big surprise, in my opinion. Like, I didn't think I thought he'd be like a decent talent, but I didn't think he had some personality. He does. I've been really liking what I've seen from him. And then I apologize. My voice is really scratchy because I got a little bit of a head cold.
You know who you sound like? Mm-hmm. And this will only pop Bay Area people here. Old Razor voice, Ralph Barbieri.
Oh,
hearing
man.
A little Ralph in you.
All right.
I like legend. Ralph. Barry, yeah. A legend, man.
Rest in peace, man. Yeah. But some of the stuff I thought was misses, like the Kevin Owens show with the main event segment, I thought was a miss.
That was rough.
I thought some of the main roster talent beating the current talent wasn't a positive in many ways, actually. But I understand why they're on the show, especially this week, right? You know, going against AEW, they're trying to load it up with some main roster stars. I totally get that. But yeah, I mean, I'm still going to watch Hall and Havoc, I think, because, you know, the NXT shows, they really do deliver still. You know, I don't know if they deliver the takeover level of the past that we all remember, but I think they'll get there again eventually. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that Julius Creed, Damian Kemp match, even though it is an ambulance match, not one of my favorite matches in the world.
I saw they brought Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal back
spin
again.
Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal. That's for, you know, for Grayson Waller and mm-hmm. Paulo Cruz. That's fine. I'm sure the three-way main event's going to be good with Bron Breakker and JD McDonough, excuse me, and Ilya Dragunov. That'd be good, but God, that I don't know what you thought about that main event segment. But
yeah, so let's actually go there now. I was going to start with the Rhea thing, let's go there. No, I think it's better start for us because mm-hmm. Kevin Owens and this may be JD McDonough's character, but Kevin Owens buried this dude, and he's a heel.
Yeah,
he's a heel. But he buried him so much so that I don't even know if JD McDonough knew really how to react.
See, I understand why they wanted Kevin Owens on this show, right? I get it. But I think it was a poor segment to put him in because Kevin Owens is going to get Kevin Owens over.
Yeah.
I don't think he really did much to really get this main event over and these guys over. You know, you can bag on Jordan Devlin a little bit, but you also could kind of mention... But how talented he is, right? You gotta say something.
Is that his character though? Because he got treated. Remember when Austin used to call Christian the creepy little bastard?
Well, he's like, I think he's supposed to be like a Christian Bale from American Psycho kind of guy. You know, just a complete nut. But not like John whatever Wayne Gacy's character.
Yeah.
You know, he's a different kind of crazy.
I was just like watching this. I was just like, is this guy peeping in windows? Like, what does Kevin Owens mean?
No. He just likes to inflict pain and he's not scared to feel pain himself to do it kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just, once I knew what the segment was, I was like, Kevin Owens is just going to get Kevin Owens over. And that's what happened. I don't even think he really put over Bron Breakker or even Ilya Dragunov over. I'd much rather have him do something else. I'd rather have Shawn Michaels out there, you know, or Triple H out there and do a contract signing, even though that's mm-hmm. kind of cliche and an old trope, I guess, now. But I'd rather have someone that's going to really put these guys over. And Kevin Owens is just there to, you know, have Kevin Owens like stun a mid-card heel or something like that, you know, mm-hmm. some goofy heel that they have on the roster. Just don't ruin your main event, or at least, I mean, me personally, those guys are three talented guys, so I know it's going to be a good match. But I'm talking about, you know, the casual viewer that's flipping channels and shout wrestling on, you know, USA. And they're like, well, I don't know if I want to tune into that. I got the Peacock, but I don't know if I want to tune in, you know, so because these guys don't seem important. But I'll wait to watch Kevin Owens on Monday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it's not like he's wrestling on Saturday.
No.
So it's not like it's a tag team match. No, it's a triple threat. So okay, here's the other thing. Ilya Dragunov, his promo was the most overacted thing I've seen in quite a while, and he was bought into it. He was screaming. He was over enunciating. He had the wrong emotion and for the situation at times. And I was just like, man, did someone give him some advice that said, you know, you want to cut like the promo of your life here when it's just like a comedy segment? Like, I didn't get that at all.
Well, Ilya, that's Ilya. That's his promo. I mean, he's been doing that since, you know, NXT UK. So
that was rough. I know,
it just didn't fit what they want. Braun Breaker I thought was good, what he said. And it was hard too. You got two bay faces, one heel too. You know, mm-hmm. I think it'd be more interesting if there was actually two heels and one, you know, one bay face with Braun as champ and Dex kind of stacked against him kind of deal. But I'd rather have it be Ilya versus Braun one-on-one, but I guess they're saving that down the line. But, you know, we already saw JD McDonagh lose already to Braun. So
can we like give him his name back now that Vince is gone?
Well, there's still, you know, marketing reasons and stuff, I'm sure. But I think certain people, there's exceptions, like Ilya Dragunov, maybe, you know, they feel like, you know, let's not change his name. I don't know. But, or maybe he gave the rights over. I don't know what he did, but I'm sure there's always exceptions to every rule, right? So, but I like Jordan Devlin better. I think it's a better name, but
yeah.
Anyways, but yeah, I was just, I did not like the main event segment at all.
So let's talk about some of the other WWE names that came over and the strategy of it. Now, I'm going to use Andrew Zarian's word again. I love this word. The optics. AEW got moved to Tuesday because of playoffs. So it's not like they went out and were like, you know what? We want to go head to head with NXT. So NXT could have looked at that and went like, eh. Like they're coming on our night, like no biggie, like that we're not even going to worry about them. But by bringing all of this main event, main roster talent over to their show, it seemed like a reaction to, oh, we have to like compete with them or we have to beat them or whatever. And I'm looking at it going like, no. The NBA and the MLB is going to do that for you. Let's just run whatever the show that you were going to run so we can build this big Saturday show. And then we don't have to have Roxanne Perez get mauled and lose this match against Rhea Ripley when we are trying to build her match at the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And like I love Rhea Ripley. Like she's one of my favorite characters on Raw. She's great. She's fantastic. I didn't need to see her just run over Roxanne Perez, like, you know, and just really, really show us why Roxanne Perez isn't at that level because she's just tiny. Like, I didn't need to see that. And, you know, I would have loved to see them, you know, possibly bring in somebody else that she could beat and then bring in somebody else that Cora Jade could beat. And then they're building to this match. But in both scenarios, the two NXT women looked like lesser thans, which I guess it makes sense, but that doesn't make me want to watch that match at Halloween Havoc.
Originally I thought it was going to be a tag team match with, you know, Rhea and Cora Jade versus Raquel and Roxy. That's what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
But which I think would have been a better match, honestly. You know, you could have had like, you know, coming up next week, they're gonna have mystery partners, and then, you know, you can have Roxanne Perez say something to the effect like, I'm gonna check out SmackDown, see who I can find maybe in that locker room, right?
Yeah.
Then she shows up on TV, and they're like, oh, NXT superstar Roxanne Perez, and you know, and she kind of comes up to Raquel Rodriguez, and boom, that match is made. And then Cora Jade on her social media, whatever, puts stuff out. She shows up on Monday, same thing with Rhea. Now you have like a fun tag match, and it don't necessarily need a clean finish. You know, you can have some kind of screwy finish where the heels cheat and go over or something, you know, like it could just, you could just branch off that. But I thought, you know, the pick your poison deal with, you know, yeah, Rhea should beat Roxanne Perez this time, but like, you're right. Like it does take away from their match. And, you know, I thought stuff that worked was, the OC and Cameron Grimes, you know, that kind of stuff, because they beat the lesser, you know, attack. You know, that was fine. That was good use.
It was fun. It was goofy. They want their money. You know, that Cameron Grimes is rich. The one thing I will say, though, is the idea that the NXT alumni were the ones who came back to NXT, I thought was cool. So Rhea, Raquel, Nakamura, Kevin Owens, all that made sense.
Yeah.
The Good Brothers don't really fit that at all. So I thought that was kind of funky because it was like, oh, they might be, it looks like they're doing a little bit of like NXT alumni are actually coming back. But no, they had, you know, they had the Good Brothers in there as well. I just was looking. Now, again, I knew what the show was. I knew why they were doing it. So I probably came into it going like, why are they doing this? You know, it's not important. And, you know, when it comes to the ratings, AEW definitely did not do their number that they usually do on Wednesday. They took a hit from moving over to the different night. And also because of the competition, they did, I think they did like a 0.26, and they're usually around the, you know, the 0.32 to 0.35. NXT was down from last week, but not very much. I don't know how much of their number was based on some of these stars. I would imagine somewhat.
Oh, I think the mystery aspect worked well. I think because like, well, who's going to show up? They know some that were going to show up, but who else? Because there's a lot of, like, you know, who Stack's going to wrestle? Here comes Shinsuke Nakamura, even though I don't think Shinsuke Nakamura means much today, right? But, you know, they're like, well, who is going to be? Who is going to be the guy that shows up for that? And, they, you know, they're waiting around to see who Zach's going to be. So,
and, you know, they did a 0.18, which is higher than usual. I think they're usually around like a 0.15. So that part of it helped. But I'm just like, man, you guys are throwing a ton of stuff against a night in which basketball and baseball are going to just dominate everybody.
I think if they would have thrown Roman out there, that would mean, you know what I mean? Like, they didn't really put the biggest guns out there, you know? I mean, Raquel Rodriguez on the main roster right now is still kind of percolating, right? She's still, you know, getting her footing there. Rhea is very popular, but still, you know, she's still in the middle of the show. She's not the champion or wrestling for the championship right now. OC's back, but they're kind of always in the middle in the beginning anyways, you know. They're, you know, who else was on there?
I mean, the more interesting thing is,
hasn't really been used that much. I mean, she has a little bit. She's back to being babyface on SmackDown.
Sonya Deville,
but she's kind of, her role's been kind of pushed back.
Well, let's talk about the Sonya Deville thing, because Alba Fire has this bat with her, and there's nothing worse than a rubber bat.
Yeah.
There just isn't. They need to give her something else. Like, Toxic Attraction and Sonya Deville are holding her, and they're putting the bat between her teeth. And it's just like, why don't you just show me even more that this is a rubber bat? Because if it was a real bat, you can't really grip it with your teeth. I thought that was really bad. I mean, I'm glad Mandy Rose is back. I know that her brother passed away recently. And there was like a touch and go thing about whether or not she was going to be back. But I was just glad to see her, just because I was like, okay, like, you know, maybe she's doing okay here. Yeah. But yeah, that whole segment was just, I was just like, man, you know, this is when wrestling can be so fake. And I don't like it when they display how fake it can be, you know?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the bat, baseball bat stuff, you know, because like just like a few weeks ago when I was tuning in to watch NXT, you know, here comes Toxic Attraction, Gigi Dolin, and JC Jane out like some SUV. And here is Alba Fire attacking him with a baseball bat, and she hits one of them in the ribs, and then they're able to wrestle later that night.
Yeah.
You know, with maybe one was taped up. And it was like, fuck, a baseball bat in the ribs, dude. We're going to hospital, you know?
Yeah.
I hate all that nonsense and stuff. And then, by the way, that segment I was talking about. The guy that's the young kid that was doing play by play mentioned like this happened earlier in the most dangerous part of the UWC. So I'm glad our joke is going over there. Maybe this just a joke around probably that, you know, there is probably jokes around that in the locker room because only shit goes down that parking lot.
Yeah, totally. All right, so Halloween Havoc is on Saturday. Paul Cruz, Grayson Waller, spin the wheel, make the deal. Coal miners glove match, maybe?
You want to even dream, you were trying to manifest that last year, I think.
I'm just reusing bits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You're just a big fan of coal miner gloves. Like, your time in Louisiana? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we've mentioned this, but it's so memorable to me because I was looking at that wheel going like, oh, man, there's so many good matches they can have. And coal miner's glove match was
they should have it to where like it spins, stops for like 0.2 on coal miner glove. It's like a chain match or something. I don't know what's gonna be. It's the gimmick with the eye, and I don't know. There's you haven't been watching the last few weeks, but there is like a place close to the PC that's close by water. There's like this little dock with a little overhang. They filmed promos with Roxanne Perez there. Mm-hmm. Apollo Crews there. It's like apparently if you want to go meet an NXT superstar, just go to this dock, wherever it's at. There'll be an NXT superstar just deep in thought about
the creepers are gonna go now though.
Yeah, well, I didn't give the address out.
NXT has had their fair share of creepers, so
that is true.
Maybe that's where they got the JD McDonagh thing. I'm just kidding. that's what Kevin Owens thought.
American Psycho, man. He's American Psycho, not Peeping Tom.
Okay, so Julius Creed versus Damon Kemp in an ambulance match. And if Julius loses, his brother will have to leave NXT? Is that a stip? Wow.
That's the stip. So I'm guessing Julius wins, or I don't know. It'd be kind of cool if Kemp wins and you got to figure that out. Because I think Julius Creed's going to be a singles.
Mm.
I mean, he has something. Like even his promo, which the last part of it was very scripted. Like that was like a very scripted line he used, but I'm sure a lot of it's scripted, but he does have a way of making it feel real, you know, from when he says a lot of that stuff. And he's just a freak athlete. You know, a lot of people were comparing, like a lot of people in NXT were comparing to him like to Kurt Angle, which I think is just a really big, you know, thing to put on a guy. But you know, he does some cool shit. I mean, still green, but damn, man, what a freaking athlete.
And then we have Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez. So they already spun the wheel, and it is a weapons wild match.
What the hell is that? Other match?
I guess it's just a normal no DQ match, I guess.
AEW Dynamite match sometimes. Yeah, yeah. The Moxley special weapons or, wild.
Yeah. You know what they should do is they should do the hammer. Hammers are legal match like Pac or like Pac. He just wants to use the hammer all the time.
He just wants to use the hammer. Hammer time.
Exactly. The hammer time match. There you go.
Hammer time match.
Put the hammer time match on the wheel. See? For
I might be a little foggy, but I still got the creative juices going.
Carmelo Hayes, Oro Mensah, Wesley, Von Wagner, and Nathan Frazier in a Chamber of Horrors match. No, I'm just kidding. I think I used that joke last year too. Ladder match again.
It's not a special NXT show without a ladder match.
That's every big match for this belt. They have a ladder match.
Dude, I know you're probably not gonna go back and watch it, but you should. The Axiom and Nathan Frazier match number 3 of 3, like
what show was that?
That was last week's episode.
Okay.
And that's how Nathan Frazier got into the ladder match.
That is a match that I'm interested in checking out.
That match is really good. Nathan Frazier, I don't think he'll get many votes for best high flyer, but he really should. I mean, Phoenix is very flashy, but man, Nathan Frazier attacks. He's mm-hmm. like he's like a Darby. Him and Darby should be top 1 and 2, in my opinion. Like just if they were on TV more. You know, at least if Darby's on TV more, he probably would win it, in my opinion. But
you mean instead of being under the garage door?
Oh, God, we'll talk about that.
Mandy Rose against Alba Fire for the Women's Championship.
That should be good.
And then Bron Breakker, Ilya Dragunov, and JD McDonagh for the NXT Championship in a triple threat match. So is this a 5 o'clock show or something, or is this earlier in the day?
I didn't check. I'm guessing 5.
I'm guessing 5 as well. Because UFC is early that day.
Mm.
So I think it's like, I want to say 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific for the early fights they begin. So whatever maybe like noon or something when the main events start.
I got the memo from the guy that runs our picks for UFC. He's really pushy. He says, the show's early, get him in early. So I got to make sure before I get yelled at.
The picks.
The picks.
All right, so let's talk about Dynamite now. Dynamite, again, on a Tuesday night. So it's kind of weird because I wasn't able to watch it live like I usually watch. We have a little bit of like a... There's some urgency involved in watching Dynamite for us because we record on the same night that Dynamite happens. So there's a, you know, there's a little bit like there, not anxiety. Anxiety is the wrong word, but there's a little bit of like, you know, there's some energy for me to get through the show and to pay attention because I know I got to get my takes ready and, you know, we're going to just talk about it. I can't come in flat. But with this one, I didn't even watch any of it last night. I thought, it's like, you know, I'll watch a little bit of it and then I'll watch some of it on Wednesday, but I didn't get to watch any of it. Warriors took precedence, so I watched the Warriors game, and then I had to record with my son after. So we did the podcast after the game, and so I kind of watched it in the morning without that sense of urgency. So I kind of watched it in like three different segments of like 30 to 45 minutes each, and I was relaxed watching this show, and I'm never relaxed watching this show because there's always something going on and there's always craziness happening and they don't, you know, nothing breathes. But when I watched this show, I felt like, oh, like I'm enjoying it in a different way and I'm watching it a different way. So, you know, unfortunately for us, there's going to be only rare occasions where we can watch Dynamite without that pressure of getting it done, you know, immediately. But yeah. I kind of liked watching it this way. I was there was less sort of like feeling of, you know, oh, I have to have this take ready, you know, we're going to record. And I was able to just kind of think about it in a different way. So for that, I enjoyed watching it Wednesday morning, Wednesday afternoon, rather than, you know, immediately and live. How did you watch this show?
I watched it later on Tuesday evening. My wife and I were watching this show called The Watcher on Netflix. And we watched like the first three episodes and I didn't watch like 10 o'clock when I started.
And you got through it just in one sitting?
Dynamite? Yeah. Yeah, I did.
The other thing that we failed to mention at the top of this show is that there has been a small advancement in this investigation when it comes to Punk and the Elite, because Ace Steel, the biter, he got released, so he's no longer on AEW. Yeah, Andrew Zarian and I did a whole thing where I was saying, you know, they should just bring him back, you know, with like these big giant fake teeth, and he can be a wrestler. And then Andrew said, no, he's got to come back as like Britt Baker's patient, like because she's got to fix his biting teeth; they're too sharp. But
I want to see the bite marks on whoever he bit, and I want to see them. To take the clay model of his teeth and just kind of match it up, make sure it's, you know, you can deny it. You know, it could be in the dog, you never know.
Well, did you see, you never saw that photo of Omega in Japan?
Oh yeah, I saw his arm. That's right.
Yeah, he did have some marks on his arm. And I don't know. I would have been wearing long sleeves, but maybe he still wanted to show off the guns and he had to show off the bite marks too.
Yeah.
Okay, so Dynamite, there were some long talking segments on this show, but there were also, I think, four title matches, so it was Title Tuesday.
Only four matches, right?
Was all the matches, all the title matches?
Yeah, a lot of promo segments.
Yeah, a lot of promo segments. Okay, so we open up, as we often do, with a Wild Trios match, Death Triangle versus the Best Friends. And I know last week, I still have not, I never watched Dynamite last week, so I don't really, I just kind of missed a week. It was like, you know, it just never happened for me. Yeah. But Cassidy beat Pac to win the Atlantic Championship. and now he could get another belt from Pac, the Trios Championship. It did not happen. But when I was watching this match, I had a question for you about the indie style.
No, this is it.
Yes.
On display.
Yes. So the indie style to me, now I am not someone who has watched a ton of indie wrestling. Like before I started going to APW with you and Premier, I'd only been to a few house shows here and there, a few indie shows here and there, and I wouldn't have even considered them to be like top level stuff. Like they were just like local stuff happening at my high school. And obviously Premier is way different just because that style of wrestling was way different. But in APW, what it seemed like is the wrestlers were basically, this is not a TV show. So they're just doing whatever sort of gets the fans excited. So you would see goofy stuff. Like I always said, Colt Cabana was so great with that crowd because they knew exactly what they were going to get and they couldn't wait to see it. The goofy stuff that he would do.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, you're kind of treating the referee not great because some of that stuff that the crowd wants is, the referee kind of has to pretend that it didn't happen in order for it to work. And so when I'm watching this match, I thought, man, this works so much better on an indie show that is not televised or that is really built to get the fan reactions, because it is not really a great television match. But at the same time, those fans in the building, you could tell they were having a blast with it. But I'm just like thinking, like, you know, this indie style, it's not great for television because of how they have to build spots and stuff for to get the crowd going.
Yeah, no, this is very indie. And, you know, there's some athletic stuff that look cool because most of those guys are really great athletes. Chuck Taylor, I don't understand why that guy's a job. I really don't understand. He's horrible.
He doesn't look happy either.
He looks, well, what the hell? You're on national television, get in shape. Let the fucking do a run around the building or do something. But he's like out of position or he's just sitting there like he's early on everything. Yeah, at one point, I think he sat in the ring, watched either Phoenix or Penta beat up Trent until the, you know, Penta or Phoenix got positioned so they can do a double team move. Like he just sat there and watched. Like if you're already in there, might as well just double team him. You know, like it's just horrible stuff. And I just, in that moment, that dude, they hit two pile drivers, don't even go over the cover. They do the stupid hug deal. And I'm like, come on, man. Like you couldn't put that anywhere else. And don't forget your women's champion's finisher is the fucking pile driver, guys. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like that same short pile driver too. Stupid asses. And then and then the hammer stuff. Now we got Pac and Phoenix having issues. And now we have another team on this roster that's having issues. Swerve and Lee and who else has issues? Fucking MGF with the firm. And it's like, Yuta and Danielson. It's like, jeez, man. It's like the same thing. It's called, sounds like, it just feels like to me a booker's kind of burnt out of ideas.
Mm-hmm. So Death Triangle does win. Phoenix hits a sit out driver. And like you said, at the end, there was some communication about whether or not to use this hammer. But in the end, they did hug. They hugged it out. The focus was really on Cassidy and Pac mostly. So I imagine that is still going to be the vision of where they're going with this stuff. But, you know, it's the normal AEW opening match. You know, they want to start hot. And it felt like they went to the picture-in-picture like almost immediately on this match, though.
Yeah, I felt like that, too. And just to make sure the All-Atlantic Championship is now, you know, make sure we take this belt seriously. Orange Cassidy brought in with a backpack. Now, I don't know. Someone out there's like, well, if you knew Orange Cassidy's history, he always did that on the indies. Well, yes, I'm going to say it's stupid then, too.
Yeah, it's not great for TV.
It's not great for TV in that belt, which anyways, no one cares about it anyways. It's just for some reason Tony Khan had a, you know, wild idea to create this belt for some damn reason. I don't know.
All right, then we got a Moxley and Hangman video package. Moxley's homecoming. He's running around the neighborhood in his gray sweatshirt, and he's not going to let Hangman come into his hometown and beat him.
Yeah, this was good. I like this.
Then we had Tony Schiavone with Britt Rebel and Jamie Hayter. They were using some cute lines here. Tony time is over. And then Britt said, Sheeta later. They both want the strap, but Britt made sure to say, the title, not the interim title. She corrected Jamie Hayter there.
Yeah. Yeah. Do some shade at Thunder Rosa there. You know, the typical stuff between him, you know, Jamie Hayter looked cute. I think she looks, she's a very attractive girl. I don't mind watching her when she's on my screen. But here is Tony Schiavone interviewing. Why'd they hire Renee again?
Okay. I'm going to bring up Renee in a little bit because she does some stuff with the interviews that I think make them more like how a real broadcast person would do them. But I don't mind Tony doing it. I don't know if we need Marvez also doing them.
Marvez, she should be ripping tickets. Renee, like last week, you didn't watch last week. She came out, introduced Christian and disappeared for like multiple segments. And there's multiple different interviews with Schiavone and Marvez. I'm like, what the hell they hired this chick for? Like, so she's really good, you know, like use her.
There was one moment where you had a Renee segment and then I think they went to commercial and then you had a Renee segment again. That's where they should have flipped it with Schiavone. Like, she shouldn't have done back-to-back segments. Like, because one was live, one was taped, but you don't need her. Like, that's why you have two, so you don't have to go back to, like, you're trying to project that the show kind of moves in sequence, and having Renee she didn't throw it to herself, but, you know, it was just, I would have rather them had Tony do the Danielson and Yuta thing, because I think that came right out of commercial.
Make Renee different than Schiavone and Marvis. Like, you know, have, you know, when you have the opener with the commentators, be like, and also our broadcast partner is in the back or, you know, getting those interviews for us, Randy, you know, Paquette. And she goes, thanks, guys. You know, tonight I'll be getting some interviews with the AEW superstars. Or I don't know if it's not superstars, but, you know, AEW wrestlers. And also we taped it a few days ago. A very interesting interview with Bryan Danielson and Willie Yuta, and we'll see that later tonight. Like, you know,
yeah,
like that was sure, like the on-site sideline reporter, basically, right? Like,
right.
What's her name from Fox? Like that kind. Right. That's all I want to see. You know,
no, that's an interesting idea. I think that, you know, if we take from real sports, that works, right? The people know who the sideline reporters are in the NFL and in the NBA. Like, those are important people. I like that idea, actually.
But it's just like they signed her and plug her into doing the same thing that everyone else was doing before that. And, like, you know, it's just she's going to be part of the back, you know, soon. She doesn't feel special. So they should use her. She's really talented. We all said that she was really one of the highlights in WWE, right?
Yeah, totally. All right. Sheeta against Toni Storm. And unfortunately, because like we said, there were not. There were not many matches on this show, but, you know, this is the one women's match on the show. And I really thought, now, in a babyface versus babyface match, it's a little bit harder to do. And so this is probably not the match for it. But I'm watching Toni Storm, and I'm just thinking, man, the camera loves this woman. All she has to do is make a sad face and the crowd will sympathize with her because they don't want to see her sad. And if they did, you know, if you have an 8-minute match and she sells for, you know, 6 minutes of it or whatever, and it's a little bit slower, you could really get her over as this like baby face who never says die and just really, you know, really make her a true baby face. But because of the style, they have to wrestle at a really fast pace. So it's just boom, 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 boom. And then because this is the only women's match on the show, it can't just be about Toni winning. It has to be about Toni winning and then the heels coming out and then Saraya coming out and then Rio coming out. Yeah. So like there were like, you know, there was like four moments in this match that they created. And I was just like, I just want to see Toni win like that. I would have been fine. A little bit longer match. Toni wins. Really good match. You know, she's just the fighting babyface champion. That's how I want to see her. But because of what they have to do, it wasn't allowed to be that. She did win with the Storm Zero. She did a different version of a hip attack, and it surely wasn't a hip attack because Sheeta was on the outside. She was on the apron, but on the outside of the ropes. And Tony just straight up threw her ass right into her face. Boom. She was out of the ring. I was like, that's not really hip attack.
I mean, own it. You know what I mean? Own that deal. And I thought the match was fine, actually better than usually get with AEW women's matches. I thought maybe a little too long because they started getting a little sloppy, especially towards the end there. The stuff with Britt and Saraya. Yeah, Taz and I both got it wrong right there.
Yeah. Taz admitted it on.
That was great. And then fucking Rio, man. Rio, she's cute, but God, did you see her run in? Does anyone advise her how to run in? When you run in, you run in to make you safe. You don't go out and start waving hands to people.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I'm here. Remember me? And, you know, like, run out, girl. And then she's like, the worst save. Whatever, man. God, people love her. But Jesus. Oh, that run in was classic. It was sad. And then at the end of the day, Toni Storm, no one cares. And that's can't believe that's happening. You know, we figure when AEW is gonna give her a chance, she's gonna be a superstar here. No, you know, she has a belt, but she ain't over.
Yeah, they really need to do some more storytelling with these women because it's just the same segment every single time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wardlow and Samoa Joe, I will not call them by the pet name. Because it is a silly name and I don't like it. So it's just Wardlow and Samoa Joe for me. And the Kingdom, there's a little video package there. What did you think of the Kingdom coming into AEW?
I like all those three. I think, you know, it's a good signing. We'll see if they're going to use it. Are they going to be used for 2 weeks and be done? Or are they going to be an important part of this company? Mm-hmm. Or are they just going to be on ROH, you know? And that kicks off next year.
So I'll just shout out quickly. The Power Bombshells, which is a YouTube podcast, video podcast on our Fight Game Media channel. Sam and Mel do it every Sunday. And they had a segment. Sam and Mel are big fans of Maria and sort of Maria's vision for women. You know, Maria's not a wrestler herself, but she's a great valet. Like in New Japan, she kind of brought the valet back, you know, a little bit there, where I was like, wow, like she's does a great job as a valet.
Yeah.
And
those shorts, you know, Japanese cameras are just
they don't care about that. They're just zooming as far up as possible. But so they had a little thing about how, you know, they thought, you know, now that Maria is here, like Tony Khan should utilize her because she has some ideas about the women's division and such. And Maria actually retweeted their little segment. So if you want to check that out, go to the Fight Game Media Twitter account and you can see the little segment about why they believe that Maria would be good for the division. So Renee with FTR. Now this was more about jokes than anything else. FTR wants to be the best. Swerve and Our Glory came out and they want the number one spot. So there's going to be a match next week where the winner is the number one contender. The best part of this, like, Keith Lee gets the punchline, he gets to finish off the jokes. The best part for me is just Swerve's reaction, and they need to put him on some of this shoulder programming that they're going to do with Warner Discovery, because he's got tremendous faces. He makes me laugh. His voice, he's got a good character down that it's kind of like the imperfect strangers kind of character, like what is the Odd Couple with you know, that old TV show. Him and Lee are kind of like the Odd Couple, but I don't know. So it's just that, you know, he's in that role and they were the champ, so he's still. But at some point, I imagine he's going to branch out a little bit. But even more than the wrestling piece, I just think he's a charismatic and entertaining dude, and I think he can do other stuff because I know they're looking to do other stuff with AEW, and they're probably going to be doing some stuff with AEW. So that's a guy that I would let's get Swerve in there and let him do some stuff. I think he'd be really good on that shoulder programming.
Yeah, he's really talented. This promo, it just like they're just making fun of the ranking system. You know, you've been number one contender for 7 months or something. And then of course,
what was the word that Lee used?
Indubitably or something?
Indubitably.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for saving me there. But you know, and then we got two more partners that are fighting, right? And I'm sure something's gonna go down with them, and it's the same old shit, you know. So it's like I can't wait for Swerve to be on his own, honestly. Mm-hmm. He really impressed me with that match. With Billy Gunn.
Yeah.
And I want to see him. I want to see him on his own. I really do.
We'll talk about the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn in a second, because they're the hottest act in the company. And, you know, we're watching 98 Monday Night Raw. And when DX is hot, they're either wrestling and doing promos every week, or they have like a skit that is given time. And I'm just like, man, you know, the Acclaimed is hot. Like, why aren't these guys live in front of this crowd every week or in a video package that's really showcasing their skill sets? They did an interview on this show, but they're being paired with Nice and Woods, the varsity athletes. How can you have two teams with the name Varsity in it? That's what I want to know.
So we'll bring it up to Tony next time. Yeah.
I imagine that poor Pillman and Griff are not long for the tag team division, I guess.
Didn't they get the rights to a Varsity Club?
Oh, did they? I didn't know.
I think so. Yeah.
I mean, that's cool, but you got to have like the legit wrestlers to be part of the Varsity Club, right? Like the legit collegiate guys.
Yeah, they don't have anyone that ever did got on the mat other than Woods, maybe, and then a couple others, but you got a bunch of indie guys who, like, what? Why can't we be the flippy guys? Flippy club. I don't know. I thought this segment was like, more fighting. We just saw some fighting argument going on with Phoenix and Pac, and more of the same.
Yeah. Alex Marvez with Jay Lethal and Darby. They were not supposed to fight, but they fought anyways.
Yeah.
I was like when I first saw where they were, I was like, gosh, where is this? Is this like the boiler room? Is Mankind
like
going to come out?
A loading dock, like on the bottom where the truck pulls in.
Yeah,
that's what it looked like to me. Yeah.
And so then they start beating up Darby, and there's a garage door that opens, and they hold him, and they put the garage door on him so that he has to stay underneath this garage door. Jay Lethal goes the other side and puts him in the figure four, and that is a segment. We never found out if Darby got out. He might be in the figure four still right now. They never followed up.
Yeah, the secret of those roll-up down doors is that they have a sensor that if something's disturbing him, it stops.
I would imagine, or else someone could get hurt.
But, you know, they do something like this. They expect it to really, you know, be like a moment, you know, that's going to spice up this program. But this stuff happens every week.
Yeah. No, I thought it was creative, but we had no follow-up. I don't know if Darby tore an abdominal muscle and his knee. Like, if you want, like, okay, and this is a really terrible comparison, but this is how I actually got into wrestling. I would say, a cursory watcher from mid-95 through late 95, and it was Saturday Night Main Event in February of 96 where I really got into it, because King Kong Bundy attacked Hulk Hogan and they made it sound like it was the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
And I was just like sucked in. And then in this scenario where Darby is getting beat up, it's just like,
bummer.
This is what happens when you come to work, man. You should expect this to happen.
Yep.
And
bummer.
I was just like,
that's what they say. The comedy bummer. Oh well, shouldn't be back there.
Oh well, that is exactly the sentiment.
Can
for
imagine,
fans too. Oh well.
If they, I know they did a dumpster match, but imagine they did a dumpster angle that the New Age Outlaws did with Funk and Cactus Jack. they would do it. They would throw them off the rampway and be like, and next up, our women's match. That's what they would do.
No hushed words from JR.
No. Like Vince coming out and Scorpio trying to punch a fight. Like nothing like that craziness. Yeah. All the chaos. They would just be like, oh, next up, we got Kylan King versus Layla Gray or whatever, you know? Like,
all right. In the best segment on the show by far, William Regal is with Tony Schiavone inside the ring, and immediately MJF comes out. He tells a story. He's like, you know, he sees Regal kind of go for the knucks, and he's like, not here to fight. I'm just here to talk. And he put away those knucks. And so MJF says that when he was 19 years old, he was training, and his trainers told him that it is his lucky day. WWE needs extras, and we've chosen you. And William Regal, that day at the Barclays Center, spoke to those extras, and then they had tryout matches. Arn Anderson was there, Dean Malenko was there, Adam Pearce was there, all with William Regal. They're all watching. Whoever the first match was between these extras, they did not give these poor guys a chance. And they immediately said, get out of my ring. MJF was the second match, and he was a little worried because he thought, oh my gosh, they have no patience for this stuff. You know, I have to be really good. And Regal really liked it. Regal pulled him aside, and he said, you have 3 minutes to sell yourself to me. After Max's 3 minutes, Regal said he was going to get him a job. And then he asked him how old he was, and Max said he was 19. And William Regal had to put a pause on that because he was too young for what WWE had wanted at that time. But he really liked Max, and he wanted to keep, you know, he wanted to keep his eye on him. And he said, look, send me a match and a promo every single month. And he did it. First 2 months, he did it. And by month three, Regal replied with an email that basically said he was a busy man, and he kind of cut down on Max's promo by saying that he was acting, and you need to go make a name for yourself on the indies. So Regal kind of like was sort of saying, okay, don't send me any promos anymore. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I sort of feel like Regal was going to make sure to keep his eye on him too, because he wouldn't have just told him that without, and then just be like, I don't care anymore. So Max said that that email really hurt his feelings, and it made him want to stop wrestling and also kill himself.
That was a bit much.
But he didn't, because if he killed himself and if he quit wrestling, it would prove everyone right. And at that moment, he said he is going to be the champion. So Regal says that when he was 16, he went to the carnival and he had to fight grown men to get a job. Regal said what he wanted to do was light a fire under Max's backside. And he said that he had it way worse, and it took getting his ass kicked, which was the physical version of the email that he sent to Max. He said, compared to Regal, you had it easy, sunshine. Regal said before MJF was born, he was in the ring with Mr. Schiavone, but he never put his hands on him. And MJF let him down because he took shortcuts, such as pushing Mr. Schiavone down a few weeks ago. Regal says, you want to be the devil? Well, beat everyone. And then Regal turns his back and he dares MJF to take shortcuts again. MJF puts the ring on the pinky, does not hit him. Regal turns around and says, you still have a lot to prove. Now, there was one flaw in this promo that I thought, and I wish Regal would have thought about it, because I think he could have made it better. He's telling Max that he's taking shortcuts while he has these brass knuckles in his pocket. And what I wish he would have said is, I only have these for self-defense. Like, I'm an old man. If someone wants to come at me, I'm a big guy. I'm a big target, but I'm an old man. So that's why I have these knucks. But he didn't say that. He just said, I just have them because I like to punch people. I was like, oh, okay. And MJF's facials, his mannerisms, the emotion in what he said, absolutely fantastic. Regal was just snarling in his face, not blinking. It was amazing. It was really, really amazing work. But I have one question for you, and you can talk about what you thought about the promo too. I have one question for you, which is, are we supposed to think that William Regal just wants wrestling to be better than it is? Because what he's actually doing is he's inspiring MJF, who's got this token to face Jon Moxley, mm-hmm. and he's firing up this guy who is not a part of his club, and Jon Moxley is the champ, and Regal is like gassing this guy up, trying to get him to be better than he is, and he's going to face Regal's guy. So that's the a part that was a little bit of a disconnect to me. I've heard some thoughts on that. But the other scenario is, do we think Regal is going to turn on Moxley? Like, I think, you know, there's a couple different scenarios. So I wanted to know what you, like, as someone who looks into this stuff very closely, where do you think they were going with this thing?
I felt a turn was coming by Regal. So for some reason, the Blackpool Combat Club doesn't feel Regal doesn't. I mean, Regal comes out, but he just does commentary. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't feel him. I don't feel like they're. I feel like a group to me. And we always see like the groups already fighting with each other. And maybe, but we haven't seen any issues with Regal and Mox yet. So I was thinking maybe a turn, or I was thinking because MJF has been talking about that chip he has, he can cash in anytime. You know, he can be a sneak with it and take advantage and win the title, right? Maybe this is Regal's telling him, like, be a man.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we got at the end of the night.
So maybe there was a little bit of a reverse psychology.
Yeah.
Don't jump Moxley after the match.
Yeah. Because that was the point at the end of the night when, you know, instead of jumping Moxley or trying to take the title like the easy way, I'm going to put it out there right now. I'm cashing in. And I want it at the pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So maybe that was what so they can game plan and not have, you know, MJF back jump him and steal the title.
Yeah, that makes some sense to me. Overall, what did you think of the segment?
I thought it was great. I mean, MJF's a highlight of probably the highlight of AEW every week, in my opinion, right now. So
he's getting ripped too, man.
Yeah, he has to. He's going to be about to be, you know, main event champ, I would think. I would think you have to put it on him this time around and go with him as the top heel, and then maybe transition to top babyface when it's time. Yeah.
All right, there was a Jericho and Dalton Castle video, which was also sort of noteworthy because they showed a lot of the ex-ROH champions, including one Seth Rollins when he was Tyler Black. Cody was also in there. And so I was kind of thinking, what's the end game for Jericho and this title? Who's going to be the ROH alumnus to beat Jericho for the prestige and honor of ROH? And if we, you know, Tony Khan just said that they're going to have TV sometime in 2023, whether it's a streaming, he didn't specify, but they're building to something. Who's going to be the person to knock Jericho off, you think?
He would think it was supposed to be Daniel Garcia, right? But then maybe Samoa Joe. I don't know who else is out there.
So I looked up all the former champions. There's one guy who is a three-time ROH champion who is currently not wrestling. He is recuperating from what I believe to be a head injury.
Oh, Adam Cole.
I was thinking Adam Cole.
But who knows with the Bucks, right? Then they do all that and they're going to be forgotten about, right?
Yeah, well, okay. So here is what I thought, which is, one of the best things about ROH getting their own TV is that I hope they split and they don't do so much crossover, because we see so much ROH stuff on this show. And I want to see AEW stuff. Like, not that it matters because they're both the same thing, but it's just like let's do the ROH stuff on the ROH show, and let's do the AEW stuff here. I would have the ROH champion also be on Dynamite. But that's like maybe the ROH tag team champions too. But I wouldn't have like all of the talent on both shows. I would split it, but I would maybe have the Adam Cole crossover, and he could be part of both brands. But he's like the only one who I think I would get really excited for. Samoa Joe is a stalwart. He's the guy, you know, he's the guy who got me into some of that ROH stuff. Bryan Danielson as well, but. We already seen Danielson lose, you know, lose the title match, so I can't imagine that he's going to be the one.
Yeah,
I think Daniel Garcia. I think that's a nice story, but I don't know if it fits the story that they're telling, which is you know this ROH is this prestigious wrestling company that, you know, wasn't on everybody's radar, but those whose radar it was on, they loved it, and that's a nice little story for the program. So it's got to be somebody who's got some prestige there. And it could have been Punk. Like, you know, if Punk lost the AEW title at some point, he could have then gone to the ROH side. But it's kind of a waste of him as well.
It's a waste. Big time waste of him. I was thinking about this on my ride home today. I was thinking about, like, because with ROH stuff, just on the shows and taking away from AEW stuff, because they're just force feeding this ROH stuff on Rampage and Dynamite as well. And I was thinking, like, but if they move this talent to the ROH show only, currently the way a lot of people are hurt, a lot of people are, there's an investigation going on, and some people can't make work right now.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big hole that's off your regular TV show or your main TV show, Dynamite and Rampage, right? I mean, God, do I want to see Samoa Joe stuck on ROH television? I'd rather see Samoa Joe versus, you know, Hangman Adam Page, Samoa Joe versus John Moxley, you know, like, FTR, same thing. Like, a lot of talent.
This is essentially Big Dave's argument, which is everything should be AEW and there should be no ROH, because you can run an AEW pay-per-view and you're going to do 120,000 buys, and you can run the same pay-per-view, or not really the same pay-per-view, but a similar pay-per-view, and put the ROH name on it, and it does like 1/4 of the business.
And we talked about this when Tony Khan purchased this.
Yeah.
It should have went dark with the ROH until they had a plan, had a TV deal, had something that includes pay-per-views, all that. Just go dark till you're ready to relaunch this thing. Get people to miss it and be excited for return. And like, oh, here's the town we're bringing back for ROH. Some of your favorites, Don Castle, Briscoe Brothers, you know, whatever. But also check out these young guys that we got, right? I don't know if they'll be available by then, but like a Jacob Fatu, Alexander Hammerstone, though I mean, Hammerstone should be in the AEW Dynamite.
It could be their version of NXT.
Yes, exactly. Like, this is where these guys will, you know, and you move some of the AEW guys that you don't have room necessarily on Dynamite. Like, this is where a Darius, what's his name? Carter. What's his
Martin.
Name? Darius Martin could go and thrive and make a name for himself. He has to be exposed on national television. He can go and make a name on the smaller scale of ROH. But then when he does do well, then we bring him up to the Dynamite. Like you said, just like NXT was, you know, is supposed to be for WWE. And, you know, that's what I think they should have done. But this force feeding, this ROH stuff, and it's just so confusing for the audience, in my opinion.
All right. So the next segment was Renee with the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn. I kind of mentioned this already.
It
was silly because now this title versus trademark thing is going to happen on Friday. And so this is like a one week storyline.
Yep. Awesome. Yep. It's super cool.
Yeah. So whatever. I'm not into it. I think the Acclaim need to be just, you know, in some of the biggest segments, like they're clearly over and
they should. I was thinking about this, instead of doing this crap, if you don't have anything to do for a match, have them come out to start rapping about stuff.
Yeah.
You know, pop culture stuff. throw in some jabs at certain talent, you know, that they're going to be facing in future matches. And then that's all, you know, having like get people excited about. There's a rap segment coming up with the Acclaimed. When's it going to happen? It doesn't happen like the exact same time on every Dynamite, but it shows up and all of a sudden, like, out of nowhere, the music hit and then they come out and then, you know, Max throws some bars. Bowens does the Sesame daddy ass, yeah. And boom, that's it. Boom, yeah. Done. Doesn't have to be much.
I mean, a lot of what the Attitude Era was about, and we the reason why we talked about the Attitude Era is just because we've watched the last 2 years of it, so it's like fresh in our minds.
You know, but, you do that. You could do that for like 2 or 3 weeks. And just come out and rap and having like a fun segment that just them coming out, nothing happens, and then finally something does.
Yeah, but that's the that's you know where I mean? WWE would do the fan service stuff, right? Is that's how they would do it. Is they knew what was on fire, and then they would just keep giving it to the fans until it wasn't on fire anymore, and then they'd, you know, move on or whatever. But
yeah,
these guys are over way more than anyone thought they were going to be, and it is time to, you know, give them more things to do. Let's see if we can actually take them from, you know, being over to maybe they could actually move some TV ratings. We don't know, right? Like, we're not sure. I think they do okay. They do decently, but what if they could actually become these, you know, these big time stars and move number, like, well, but we don't know because, you know, they're not on TV every week. So,
yep.
All right. So then Renee did another thing with Danielson and Wheeler Yuta. This was kind of a sit down thing. Danielson wasn't happy losing to Jericho. Thinks Garcia could be the best. And Yuta's like, hey, man, I'm sitting right here. Like, I'm on your team. Yeah. And you're just blowing this dude up, Garcia. And he's, like, made you look like a fool. And so Yuta believes that Garcia was just using Danielson. He's pissed at Danielson for not seeing it. And he said that Cesaro feels the same way. And, Danielson is just kind of like, you almost sense that he sees himself definitely as part of the Blackpool team, the club, but also like there's interest in, I don't know if it's the Darth Vader thing where you're trying, there's some good in this person and you want to change him. Obviously, it's going to be to his downfall somewhat. But yeah. I mean, I'm intrigued, but I'm always going to be intrigued with Danielson's stuff anyways.
Yeah. And like, but what sucked, like, again, a team, group members arguing. So we saw this for the third time now on the same show. But they could have done something. Like, once Wheeler Yuta takes his mic off, throws it down and leaves, it just quickly cuts away.
Mm-hmm.
What if you just, the segment, the interview actually ends, but the camera's still rolling, and you hear or see in the background Danielson going towards you to talk, confront, and you see them have a really heated argument that maybe you hear some of what they're saying, maybe you can't, and then Yuta storms off again, you know what I mean? Or there's a shoving, maybe Yuta gives a little shove, like something to keep you like, wow, shit's going to, yeah, keep watching this. It was like, boom, it's over, he's mad. Next.
Yep.
Bummer.
Next to the match.
Oh well.
Yeah. It's not to the back like, yeah, TNA. It's nope, to the match.
To the match, yeah.
So we got Dalton Castle versus Chris Jericho. I was so happy that Taz was doing the call on this match, because the first half of this match I thought was so stupid. And Taz is calling it out. And I get Dalton Castle, I get the gimmick. Yeah. The fans like it. He's flamboyant and he's, you know, over with that thing. And then when push comes to shove, then he does do wrestling. You know, he is a good wrestler. But he was calling him out for, he's like, dude, you're in a title match here. You know, quit the goofy stuff. And I was like, exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking.
It would also, made it look really goofy. Jericho didn't sell it.
Yeah.
The part where he's, you know, Dalton Castle runs out, starts doing jumping jacks with the boys, running around the ring and all that kind of stuff. Jericho's just watching him. He's not like getting frustrated or like getting upset that he's showing him up, or, you know, and then by his being such a hot, but Jericho being so upset, you know, Dalton Castle sneaks in and takes advantage. He just watched him. That's all that happened. I was more offended by the Jake Hager spot with the boys on it. That was stupid. That was absolutely stupid. Yeah, dumb. And like, they had this planned out where like, don't mess with my hat. But the first thing that happens, the hat gets knocked off.
Yeah, yeah.
He has to put it back on, do the thing, and then do it. Don't knock off my hat. It was so lame. But I will say, it turned into a pretty good
match. No, it did. It did. And that's what I was going to follow up with, which is immediately Jericho puts a hand out for the handshake. Dalton Castle goes in his tights for about 10 seconds to pull out a middle finger. And I was just like, man, I've watched enough Val Venus on 1998 Raw. But that's what it reminded me of. But like you said, the match does get good. Dalton Castle is a unique wrestler in that he's got really good suplexes. He kind of wrestles like he's always hurting in a weird way, because he's got messed up back, right?
Messed up back, yeah.
But he's got like the broad chest, and his chest was on fire, so it was a little different. And I liked the match, and Jericho, you know, he was hitting Jericho with stuff, hit the bangarang, and then just immediately Jericho hits the Judas effect to win the match. But eventually, I did like the match, but I hated like the first 5 minutes of this thing.
He should be babyface Adrian Street, Street. You know, do his thing, get the heels upset with all his, theatrics, and then, he takes advantage of that. He gets them so hot-headed, they're off their game plan, you know?
Yeah,
I cracked up that when Shona Giovanni is running down Dalton Castle's credentials, and he's like, something about wrestling beach champion, and like Daz is like, it's the first time I've ever heard about a wrestling beach champion or something like that. It cracked me up.
So Jericho cuts a promo and he's like, yeah, I'm going to beat the wrestlers, RH wrestlers and the ring announcers and also the broadcast announcers. And Ian Riccaboni is just like, huh? And he goes and grabs him. I get scared in stuff like this because I imagine Ian Riccaboni's been in spots before, but like, he's like a smallish guy, and you've got these big giant men who are just holding onto him and grabbing him and making it look like they're, like they're being struck. Like, I was... Well,
that's the visual you want, though,
right? No. It is, but also, I'm remembering the story because this is not actually wrestling, but it is with a wrestler. So Bill Hader was on Bill Simmons' podcast like years ago, and he was talking about... Did you ever watch Saturday Night Live when The Rock hosted and he opened with The Rock Obama skit?
No.
And so it's basically he's Obama and then he turns into like the Incredible Hulk version of Obama. And he's got to throw Bill Hader out the window. And so they practice it the night before, and Bill Hader's doing all of it. Like Rock kind of grabs him and then Bill Hader basically jumps out the window, right? But because of the adrenaline of the live show, Bill Hader to The Rock tosses him so far that he flies over the padding that they had for him to do the safe landing. And he's about to scream, oh, fuck, on the air that the person who was there, the stunt person or whatever, was like telling Hader, like, don't yell because it's live TV and the people will hear it on mic. And so what I was thinking is like in this scenario with Riccaboni, he's cold in the sense of he's just announcing, but these guys are all jazzed up, right? Like they're probably like all fired up, and just to grab him and hold him, like I'm just worried about him thinking like, man, they may think that they're being kind of cool, but their adrenaline is going and they might be holding on a little tight or whatever. Like that's the stuff that I get kind of like, I'm so glad I don't have to do anything like that because I would be scared out of my mind.
You know, it's funny, like Jericho in that segment's like, I destroyed RH ring announcers, but Bobby Cruz was ring announcing this match.
Yeah.
But he didn't do that big of a damage, dude. Like he was not, it's so stupid, these guys.
All right, so then we had
saved the day. No one saved the day, right?
No, Jerry Lynn.
Oh, yeah, Jerry Lynn, and he got beat up, right?
Jerry Lynn got beat up, And then Jericho gave him a tombstone pile driver on the leather side of the belt. I've never seen that before.
Yeah, that was a little, you know, that was the plan, but, you know.
Yeah.
Is Jericho going to wrestle?
I don't know. Maybe he's one of the matches.
Is he former ROH? He's a former ROH champion, right? But
yeah, and then they mentioned the neck problems and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Maybe he does do a match.
Or maybe not. That's the way to get out of that. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, because he beat up somebody who.
Ooh. I don't know who's going to beat, but what if Mr. JL showed up? But it's not Jerry Lynn. It's actually some, you know, superstar. You know, like some young gun, maybe. I don't know. Maybe it's talking to Wheeler Yuta and, mm-hmm. you know, Mr. JL outfit. It won't be me. But
that's hilarious because there's a segment of this audience who would crack up and die laughing because they understand. And then there's like 90% of the rest of the audience are going like, what the hell is going on with this Mr. JL?
Dude, I remember like when Mr. JL showed up, I was like, why don't they just call him Jerry Lynn, man? But then I was like, Mr. JL, Mr. John LaRocca. I dig it. That's one of my favorite wrestlers.
All right. Then we had a Christian Luchasaurus video package. Christian said Luchasaurus had to have been the brains of the team. I love Jack Perry. I'm rooting for the guy. I hate the Jungle Boy on TV right now. Man.
Yeah, this is not good. Not good. And their match last week sucked. I mean, they just had an indie match. And no one knows how to do a grudge match. And it was just a indie match, man. It was bad. And of course, Luchasaurus is not that good either. Yeah. And you got Christian there. You think he'd be helping these guys out, but I don't know. Maybe he doesn't give a shit. I don't know. But it was a bad match. Don't go back and watch that. If you're going to go back and watch anything, watch Axiom versus Nathan Frazier. That's definitely worth
watching. What about Jericho Danielson?
It was all right. Mm. I mean, I thought some people said Jericho turned back the clock, but I didn't think so. Jericho's punches are bad, dude. Like they're embarrassing bad.
All right, so for Rampage this Friday, Acclaim versus the Varsity Athletes, Penelope Ford versus Willow, Roosh versus Preston Vance.
This is a fucking barn burner show.
it doesn't get better, by the way. Hook versus Ari Daivari for the FTW title. I guess that's the main event.
That's the main. No, is it?
Acclaim Varsity Athletes. I guess
the only person I like that show is Willow. Love that girl.
Yeah, she's good.
Yeah.
I mean, if I hadn't bought a ticket to Rampage yet, and Rampage was in my hometown, that is not the show that would actually get me to buy a ticket. They got to add something more, right?
Yeah, because it's live, right?
I think so.
Wow. Man, that's rough.
Yeah. So, okay. And then next Wednesday, FTR versus Swerve in Our Glory. That should be pretty good. Mm-hmm. Rio versus Jamie Hayter. That's going to be an interesting finish because Jamie was really over, and they've kind of brought her down a little bit, hoping that to get her
hot
again.
But Rio just showed up. You don't want her to be her, right?
Yeah. So the booking on that one is interesting because Riho is like the most popular live wrestler that they have for some reason. People just love her.
Yeah.
And then we have Jericho and Garcia versus Yuta and Claudio. And then Danielson versus Sammy Guevara just because, I guess.
That should be good, man. If Sammy could just figure out how to really be just a classic chicken shit kind of heel. No, he should really study. It's Tully Blanchard. He should have picked his brain when he was there, you know? Like, because Tully Blanchard has that same thing that Sammy had, that smackable face, that attitude. And, you know, Sammy needs to, instead of concentrating on doing the flips and doing the craziness, like, bump and feed and, you know, take big backdrops, bump over the top rope for the baby face, sell your ass off.
He should be a great chicken shit heel.
Yeah, he would be dude, people want to see the baby face kill that guy. You know, don't try to pop him with some stupid flying move. He could do ones here and there, but try to be just a good fucking heel. I don't know. It just drives me insane. That's all that potential in that guy. You know, like he could be.
All right, Renee with Layla Gray and Kira Hogan.
I'll show you. Write this down. How do you write this down? Did this happen?
And Jade was on the show. Okay.
Oh, fuck. She wore this down your Reds jersey. So, that's right. I do remember this now.
There is something that I really liked about this, and we'll get to it in a second. So Nyla stole the belt, but Nyla is going to be in Jacksonville on Friday, and Jade will show up. She was very pissed off with Layla and Kira because they were looking for Nyla, and Jade's like, she's not even here. You guys are looking for her for no reason. And so Jade cuts her promo, and she says the words, chicken shit. Renee made a face that a real broadcaster would make if they were doing a live interview and the interviewee cursed on TV. She made this face that stayed with me, and a lot of people probably didn't even pay attention to it. I was focusing on it for whatever reason. And I was like, God, thankfully, that's like the real thing that you do in that moment, which is the face that she made. What she's telling the audience is, oh, man, I lost control of this interview. Like, I always kind of joke about, you know, Tony Schiavone lets all these people steal his mic and nobody should steal the mic. Like, when I do the stuff with Brian and Dave, when I do the Q&A, like, people want to take the mic, and I'm like, no, you're not taking the mic. I'm taking the mic because if you start going wild and start asking a stupid question, then I've lost complete control. If you do that and I have the mic, then I just push you out of the way and I have my mic. In this scenario, I thought Renee acted like a real interviewer, a real reporter would do if someone kind of went over the top. Tony Schiavone, his face is a cartoon face in the same thing, right? And I think the fans kind of like that. But I was like, oh, God, this is why Renee is so good. Not the only reason, but it's stuff like that that I acknowledge and that I follow. And I'm like, God, that was really good.
Yeah, Tony Schiavone, like I say, he's this cartoon character. He goes out there. He just says one thing, and they either take the mic from him or he just stands there next to him by the end of the segment. People put their hats on him, coats. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's all he's there for. He's just a coat rack. And, like, you know, Renee, that's what I want. Like, okay, Tony Fine, that's cool. You want to sit there and say a few words in each match? That's cool. Do your thing. Marvez, cover football. And then, like,
yeah, I mean, look, you know, Marvez is not good in this role, but he was a real reporter. Like, he was a real football reporter. And
exactly. Poor football.
So he's legit, but in this role with wrestling, he's not really.
Make Renee the sideline reporter. Make her, you know, she should be free to roam around everywhere and be everywhere. So he's fine. Always looks silly. He's just commentating a match. Now he's in the bag. Now he's back. It's like he has like a Vespa or something. Like
yeah, exactly. All right, then we get to our main event. Moxley's coming to the crowd. Hangman jumps him before he makes his way to the ring.
Finally. Someone did that. I don't know if someone did it before, but, you know, Hangman, he was studying his tapes.
Yeah, yeah. They go into the crowd, and Mox is kind of in the area where the wrestlers are coming out, and Hangman does a moonsault from, like, the top of the balcony or the tunnel or whatever that is. That was ridiculous. It was like, right, bam, right away. Like, first big move, this crazy moonsault. And that kicks off the match because then it just goes from there. Yeah. Like, man, you know, that could have been like something at least leading to the finish. But no, that was the beginning of the match.
That was crazy. But have you seen, you should check out Ikem and Jiro doing that from in Japan at the Yokohama. Just in wrestle one. That was nuts.
Dude. Right. Right in the beginning of the match.
Yeah. Now in the middle, they kind of fought out there.
Okay.
Yeah. But I was just like nuts. Like, it's still crazy what he did. I'm like, why would you do that? You know, like, you hurt yourself. But later on.
I was like, man, you know, Adam Page is a big guy. That's a far fall. That's a fast fall. But he's very athletic, so it looked great. I thought it was a nice brawl to start the match, and then the match started to get going. And right as it's kind of getting good is when the injury happens. And Mox hits him with the clothesline. I don't know. The clothesline looks to have connected on the side of the head, like maybe near the ear.
Yes.
And then Hangman does a flip bump, and then he goes out, and he's limp, and he's not getting up. Where do you think the injury came from? Was it from the bump?
Yeah, no, it's from, no, it was the
clothesline. That's what I thought too.
And this is, you know, Moxley's not at fault here. It's actually Hangman's fault because he was going for that spin bump off the clothesline.
Yeah.
Instead of he just went straight, gave him the chest as a target, and then been fine. But that spin bump stuff, man, it's such a bump that's overdone, overused. Yeah,
it happened like two or three times on this show.
Yeah, it happened. That definitely happened in the Indy-rific match in the beginning with the six-man tag team titles. But like, you know, like that's what happened. He's trying to go for the spin bump. So Mox throws the clothesline, and you know it's because he doesn't have that chest target. As Paige is turning around for the spin bump, right in the side of the head, bam! Yeah, and then of course he goes down on his neck, and that was nasty.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's a freak accident, and a lot of people were trying to trash on Mox, and you know, for it wasn't his fault. It was honestly Paige's fault. It's just you know, he tried to go for a bump and it just didn't work out the way he wanted to. And of course it was end of the match. And, you know, I didn't want to downplay like concussions earlier. I said like, you know, at least it wasn't neck injury.
Yeah.
But concussion is still serious, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Serious. Like we just talked about Adam Cole. He's been out for a long time.
Yeah. So I hope he makes a recovery.
Yeah. I know it's, I was having this conversation on the 49ers podcast that I do. And in football, the coaches, they sort of use the concussions as a way to say, yeah, at least it was a concussion. It wasn't anything more serious. And a lot of fans get mad at that. And I understand why, because it's almost like saying, well, concussions aren't serious. They're not saying that. Basically, the injuries that happen in football are ligaments and
cerebral spines
and these really crazy injuries where you can lose a player for, you know, a full year, a full season.
Yeah.
But a concussion is a little bit more unpredictable in that they could be back the next week, though I would imagine a concussion doctor would say that's still too early, or it could be multiple weeks, right? Like that's just kind of how the NFL works. So when the coach does that, he's sort of saying, well, at least he's not out for, you know, he didn't tear his knee, so we know that he'd be out for the end of the season. But a lot of fans get kind of frustrated with that. But in this same scenario, Big Dave said, I think it was last night or this morning, he's like, you know, he's fine. And I was like, is he really fine?
He's not
really fine, but what he meant to, or what he was meaning to say was a concussion in this instance is better than the worst fear that fans had, which is that he possibly broke his neck or something.
Yeah.
That would have been worse than with what we seem to believe is a concussion that he should come back from.
Yeah. Yeah. It was scary. Definitely. It was very scary. And, you know, like, I hope they don't rush him back, or even if the doctor gives the okay to come back in a couple weeks, I would say, you know what? You just lost here. I would hold him off to the pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as a surprise, or just as like coming out and challenging someone for, he doesn't need to wrestle the pay-per-view. You just come out and like, hey, he's back, or you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like he needs some time away so people miss him, and then can't wait to see him back. Plus, now he has this sympathetic story of being hurt, and people saw him getting carted off in a stretcher, and now he makes his triumphant comeback. You know, there's no need to rush him. No need to rush him. I know they got a lot of guys hurt and all that, but I say, you know, might as well let this take this time as well for him to recover and also freshen himself up as a character.
As a sports broadcasting nut, I was very interested in the last 10 minutes of this show. Because I didn't know what the hell they, and again, I watched it, you know, 12 hours after everyone else did, but I had no idea what they were going to do because they had like 10 minutes left.
Okay. They started the match, the main event match, a little earlier than normal. So I thought, like, oh, they're getting this match a lot of time.
Yeah.
Now, were they getting this match was this going on early because they're giving the match a lot of time, or were they giving this match early because they need this back end segment?
Yeah, because the MJF thing was going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
So Excalibur and Tony Schiavone are trying to pass the time because what's happening in the ring is they need to get the stretcher out for Paige. Mm-hmm. To me, I show that stuff because that's how they would do it in the NFL. That's how they would do it in the NBA. That is drama mm-hmm. that you are showing. That is news that you are showing on your television show. But they took the camera completely off of him.
Yeah.
And they decided to read the matches all over again. And in the middle of this, Taz kind of cuts them off and he's like, you know, I'm sorry, guys, but
yeah.
And he's really bummed out. And that was actually like some real emotion. Mm. And I was like, I know a lot of people were kind of wondering what was going on there. I was like, no, that was just his real emotion. Was it the most professional way for him to explain that? No, probably not. You want a real broadcaster to explain what is going on, but because they don't want to show the stretcher thing, the announcers have to talk around something that just happened on our television that we saw with our own eyes. And now as fans,
that's all we're thinking about.
That's all we're thinking about is this seems to be real based on what happened. And so thus we are fans of Adam Page, the wrestler, and somewhat the human being. You know, we don't know him as a human, but you know, we want him to have a successful life too, as a, you know, that's how close we are to this stuff. I didn't expect them to show it. I was still frustrated that they didn't, because I think they really took, I hate to say this because this is the wrong word, but again, like wrestling, we know wrestling is scripted, but you don't have to make it more fake than it is. That is a scenario that they haven't really had to deal with in the past. So I will give them sort of that, you know, that give them that pass. But man, I would have covered that thing. I would have produced that thing way differently. He goes out on the stretcher and he gives that thumbs up to the crowd or whatever that he did, which is what you see in the NFL.
Yeah. Yeah.
That alleviates a lot of what the fans were super worried about. And it creates drama and it creates the news. That's how you produce that thing. But they didn't do that. Instead, they threw to Mox, but they threw it to him a little early because he didn't even have a microphone yet.
Yeah.
They had to come back, threw it to him again, and he goes off the cuff, hopes that Hangman is okay, you know, hopes that he can walk again, all that stuff. And so the fact that Mox said that, it makes them not showing what just happened even more stupid, because now Mox has told the fans that something really bad happened that they saw, and that it was really bad. So again, I'm just like, I admit, you know, they didn't know what Mox was going to say, but I was kind of frustrated at that. Then he calls out MJF. MJF has the ref. He's got the chip. He's running down. You know, you talked about Riho saving, you know, with a smile. Max was determined here. He had the ref. He's grabbing him. He's like running with him, almost pulling him. Yeah. He's got the little chip. Regal dares him to use it. Go ahead. He's right there.
True me right.
Exactly.
That's what, yeah.
MJF runs to the back or runs past the ramp, gets the mic, and he says he'd rather have Mox at 100%. He's cashing, excuse me, he's cashing the chip at Full Gear. The other part of this that that I wanted to ask you about was the MJF Regal piece. It seems like that's the conflict versus the MJF and Moxley thing. So I hope they make it more towards MJF and Moxley, and this is kind of like the build to it, because
they will.
Now, it's just sort of MJF and Regal.
Yeah, I think they will. I think they will. I don't think you and Regal would want to take away from Moxley and MJF's main event. So
yeah,
I think he will play to the finish.
Yeah.
Be it be it either the turn which I kind of hope doesn't really happen, honestly.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't happen either.
But if something does happen to Regal, which takes Mox out of, takes his eye off the ball.
Yeah.
He's more concerned about Regal, where MJF can take advantage and win the match.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying do the old Fritz Von Erich fake heart attack deal or anything like that, but you know, like, I don't know. We could do something there with that. And you protect Mox, and MJF gets a, at the end of the day, proves Regal right and cheats to the title.
All right. That is it. We will be back next Wednesday night, Thursday morning. And Dynamite will be back on Wednesday. So this show will be more of our immediate thoughts rather than my 24-hour thoughts. But otherwise, it was a very newsworthy show. And I am not going to watch Halloween Havoc, I don't think. But if there is anything good and John is checking it out, we'll talk about it next week's show.
I'll watch it later that evening. I'll shoot you a text.
All right. All right. So for the Razor Voice, John LaRocca, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.